Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. With all the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. And I'm trying to please to the calling of your heart strength.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. It is Valentine's Day, and who better to have on my show on Valentine's Day than the goddess herself, Angie Setz of the Goddess of Grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. Happy Valentine's, my dear.
Aw, thanks. Happy Valentine's Day to you.
Yeah, give me a little Cupid.
Right? It's definitely never been really on my list of any of the major. I'm the opposite, I think, of normal women out there. You know, there's a lot of where the idea is that everyone's so excited about Valentine's Day. I'm just kind of like, oh, it's February 14th.
Well, me too. Cool. That's, you know, let's get through the day, right? Forget the rest of the crap. So, all of a sudden you and I talked and we said last time we expected a rally in grains and we didn't care about the report, and voila, here we are. We got a rally in grains. What do you take from this?
Yeah, I you know, it's been one of those things where a lot of people thought that we were wrong in our thinking. I know they did. You know, I had a lot of interaction of, that's crazy. You know, March wheat should definitely go to 380 before it goes to 450. And you know, here we're sitting above 460. So we definitely saw Chicago wheat start to generate buying interest and churn higher. In turn, corn's kind of rolled along with it. I mean, we really have not. We had a neutral, I would call it, reaction to what could have been considered a negative report. And I think at that point, folks realized the likelihood of us moving much lower was almost non-existent at that time. You know, we'd factored in all of the negative fundamentals we really could. And, so here we are, you know, we're up 20 cents off the lows in corn and significantly higher in wheat. I think 60 cents off the low, if not more. The one that continues to have me scratching my head in from the standpoint of, wow, it's resilient, is soybeans. You know, soybeans right now have broke through the recent resistance and are trading, you know, much higher, well above $10. And based on the last USDA number we got, where they increased carry out, you know, by another 60 million bushel up to 530 million bushel, you'd have never thought that we would need to see a 30 cent rally from that. But I guess that's the fun part about soybeans, is that they do whatever they want. So here we are. Farmers are happier, albeit more confused now, because these are prices they wish they could have sold. And now they have that opportunity and they're kind of, you know, wondering if they're going to sell too soon, I guess. And so here we sit.
And again, I think they got more room to go on the upside. I think that when you look at the bigger picture, I mean, I'm looking for much higher prices. And I think that if you get the break in equities, I think that'll bring more money to the market, to these markets, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the classic conversation, is that we would see money flow shift. We did see some short term where, you know, last week when we were exceptionally volatile in the Dow and the outside markets, it felt like we had heaviness everywhere. Which would make sense. I think you may see a knee-jerk reaction of just kind of everyone pulling their hands and arms inside, or hands and legs inside the roller coaster car. You know what I mean? But
right.
Yeah, long-term wise, you look at long-term charts in the corn and wheat market. If you look at what's going on from a global standpoint, the fact that we're seeing a continuation or a trend of reduction in global stocks, you know, it's really one of those things where, I think the potential could be there to see the market continue to move higher. And we're setting up orders accordingly with my customers. You know, it's one of those things where we start locking in values when we know we can make money, with the intent of taking advantage of spreads as the carry widens. You know, and I'm talking new crop stuff out that way. We have, you know, the ability to turn some 396 futures sales into 427 on the July, you know, once that carry widens out to areas it should be trading in or typically trades from a historical standpoint. You know, we have that ability there. We have that intent. And so that should help generate $4 cash corn for guys a year out. But yeah, I mean, we're anticipating an upturn move and have orders in place to take advantage of it accordingly.
So now how long have you been with Citizens Grain or Citizens Elevator?
7 years.
And your task, your job is as the vice president, you do.
I manage all of the risk of the company. So my main thing, you know, as an elevator, what an elevator tends to do is at harvest time, we take in and purchase mostly from the farmers the grain. So they deliver grain to us in during harvest, October, November timeframe is for our elevator in particular is the bulk of harvest. We take wheat in July and August. We take corn and soybeans in October and November. And typically the farmers that deliver at those time periods will hedge on those months, off the July or the September for wheat at harvest time, off the November or December soybean and corn board at that point in time. And then my job is to take that grain that they've sold to us and those hedges that they put on, those short positions that I have put on, because if you buy cash grain, you short it on the board to manage your risk. And then I manage the spread side, maximizing our gains in the futures market when it comes to the carry that is there and basis. And so then I make the determination of when I sell that grain out of the elevator to maximize the elevator income. But in addition to that, I also work directly with farmers on a direct ship program is what it's called. So I help them use their bin setups to trade like a mini elevator. And that's a little bit of a different side of the business than the elevator itself, because I never actually physically handle those bushels. The farmer or my drivers will deliver those to an end user directly. And I just help the farmer maximize and enhance his marketing plan from there.
So
if that makes sense.
No, yeah, and so you're also dealing with individual customers as well, or is that part of the deal that you do the customers with the elevator deal?
Yeah. I handle all of the customers. Yeah. So I deal with there's probably, I hate to guess, but I would say over 500 customers that I deal with. Probably, you know, maybe even closer to 1,000, depending, you know, some I talk to once a year, directly after harvest, we discuss selling their crop and we do. Others I talk to, you know, every other day. And so it may range from farmers that only have 40 acres of corn that they farm, you know, when they get out of work at the local GM plant. You know, it's a small guy who has very limited risk, you know, maybe produces 3,000 bushel or something like that a year. And then I have guys that are upward of a million plus a year that I work with making a marketing plan and turning their bushels into cash.
So do you make the marketing plan with them as well?
Yes. Yeah. We'll sit down and I try to help them construct or build, you know, what they're trying to accomplish. So my job, I see it as we work within the realm of expectations. You know, what are we working with from a future standpoint? What's the likelihood or what historically do we see happen with spreads? And what are we anticipating to happen with basis? So I oversee that whole side of the thing. And then we sit down and say, okay, you know, what are you going to have to move at harvest time?
All right, hold that thought. We'll talk about harvest time. We'll talk about the relaxing harvest time on this Valentine's Day with our own Valentine, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, I want to remind you to download the show every single day. Don't forget, you got to take care of Angie, and you got to take care of me. We're trying to get to our goal of 1 million downloads a month, so it's going to take you to help me out. And don't forget to get Bubba's daily update, which I send to you via YouTube and a little video every day after the market closes. All you have to do is sign up is go to BubbaTrading.com, and you can get that video sent to you every day right after the market's closed. We'll be back right after the break with more from our Valentine, Angie Setzer. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back. Welcome back to the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz, on this Valentine's Day Wednesday with our own very special Valentine, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. So, all right, you were talking about harvest and going, walk us through a marketing plan and walk us through what the work goes into. Because, you know, obviously, if you're just a grain farmer, you've got some downtime, you know, this time of year and, you know, back foot through from the end of December through or mid-December through March, kind of.
Yeah. It's we call it meeting season, of course, because no one has anything else to do but kind of think about what they want to do in the year ahead if they don't have livestock. So this is really when we really start to discuss things. And like I said, the first step I always talk to guys about, and I say guys, but it's a unisex term. It, honestly, though, I do work with probably 99% of the people I work with are male. So I get used to saying guys. But anyway, we talk about what we expect or what we're up against in the futures market is the first step, I think, is just kind of evaluating and structuring a realistic outline to what we think the market will do based on the current knowns that we have in place and things of that nature. And then we talk about, you know, what I call the non-negotiables, which are your space and cash flow needs. Those are things you can't really work around. Space is key for my growers in the sense that, if you're going to grow 150,000 bushel of corn, you know, based on an average yield expectation in the acres that you have in mind, and you know that you only have 100,000 bushel of space, you have 50,000 bushel with which you have to move at harvest time. So those are the first bushels, in my opinion, that should be sold. And we do all of our stuff using futures only. So it gives us some flexibility and allows us to make decisions later on, you know, with carry and things like that. And then the second step is to take a look at what the cash flow needs are. You know, do you have a bunch of bills to pay in January or something like that? So then we make the decisions on further sales. Right now, most of my customers are sitting in a situation to where we determine what kind of percentage we want to sell. So we're looking at trying to sell 40% of our expected production, you know, in a range between 390 to 420 on the December. So we have target orders in place accordingly. And like I said before, these folks that I'm working with have grain bins, so their intention will be to move that corn later. And right now, you know, you look at the DEES 18, July 19 spread, and it's only trading about 16 cents. Typically, in a market structure like we're looking at with, you know, around 2 billion bushel of carryout, which without anything out of the absolute norm this crop year, we should continue to maintain around that 2 billion bushel carryout. You typically will see DEES to July carry get to about 30 cents. So the reality is guys will hedge on the DEES 18 with the intent of rolling that forward once, I say once the carry matures. I don't think that's a technical term. I think anyone in the market would be like, what are you talking about, the carry matures? But once it widens out to where it should be, based on historical norms, will be when we start to make rolls, and then we'll make determinations of basis and stuff like that once we get to that actual point in the market. So a lot of my job right now is focusing on how to turn old crop bushels into cash and maximizing that as best we can, which that's like putting lipstick on a pig in the corn market or the wheat market. The bean market's a little bit easier. We're dealing with 950 to 975 cash. But I'm best at helping guys get futures locked in and working those spreads and figuring out basis and stuff like that later on. And so that's where the bulk of my work is centered.
So what is basis? Give us the definition of basis.
Yeah, basis is the difference between the cash price the grower has paid and where the futures are trading. It's a function of local supply and demand. So if the supply locally is greater than the demand, then of course basis is weaker, is what they say, or further away from the board. So if the board's trading at $4 and basis typically around harvest time would be like a 30 under. If the crop is larger than anticipated or demand weakens, then that basis could go out to 40 or 50 under, meaning you're looking at 350, 360 cash as opposed to the 370 at that 30 under basis. If it's if there's more demand than supply, then basis heats up and can sometimes go over the board even. So like right now, my growers are locking in a 10 over basis is what we call it. So they're locking in 10 cents above where the March board's currently trading to deliver into one of our local ethanol plants.
So, but I mean, it doesn't, it, I mean, if I own the future, I can mm-hmm. I can force delivery, can't I? So, I mean, why is there such a difference in basis? I mean, that was always something that, you know, troubles me, because if the cash basis is bigger, I can cover my futures and go back and get rid of it in cash. And if my cash basis is lower, I can hold the futures, right? So either way, so that's one thing. I'm just trying to get clarification, because I know that a lot of listeners don't understand all this. I get it, but
and that's why it's always dangerous. Is that when I talk to farmers across the country, I talk about selling into what is a closed market or what is an open market. A closed market is a market in which you're selling to your end user. So your end user may lock you in an HTA. You may be able to lock in a futures value with the end user. And the reason farmers, when I say HTA, it's a hedge to a rise. It's a futures only contract. So it's basically they call up the person that they usually would sell grain to, and that person's who sells it on the board. I manage the margin calls for my customers and things like that, with the knowledge that when it comes time to deliver, we will convert that. So it's the sales of futures with the expectation of cash delivery in my side of things.
Okay.
For me, I'm wide open. I'm not originating for an ethanol plant. I'm not doing anything. My job is to find the best market for my farmers and maximize their margin. That's how I make money. That's how I build a customer base and continue to grow my customer base, is that I work for my customers in that regard. When it comes to selling into an ethanol plant or an end user of any kind, yes. I mean, there is a clause in any of these contracts that states that, you know, the buyer can dictate when delivery can take place. There's a local ethanol plant close to us that will only allow two rolls within a contract. And even then, they have a little addendum that says, you know, unless they determine that they want the grain delivered at such and such time. So there is a danger, and that's why I say to the folks that I don't work with directly but maybe speak to, that they need to know who they're working with and trust who they're working with, because there has been and there continues to be in certain areas a predatory sense in the market structure where they want to take advantage of maybe the farmer's lack of knowledge on his rights or his ability to be hedging and things like that. So it is a deal where, you know, for a grower, they have to know who they're dealing with. For me, I'm not working with anyone other than my bank. You know what I mean? So my risk is if I were to have a, you know, like right now, you know, I have a significant position on DEIS 18. You know, my average hedge price is about 401. Let's say the market were to rally to $7. You know, my biggest concern would be my bank allowing me to continue to margin, you know, in the $3 rally, which we've seen before. That has changed. You know, 2008, there was a, you know, 10 years ago, there was a threat by a lot of banks that they were going to blow elevators out of those types of positions, you know, force them to liquidate. They were no longer going to allow credit for their margin calls and things like that. But we have a really good relationship with our bank. So that's our only risk would be that our bank would force us to liquidate. And then at that point, I'd have to swap futures with a different end user or something like that, which I did have to do in the past with my former company. So I've been down that road before, but I don't think it's a journey I have to fear again, because the market mindset's changed a lot versus, you know, where we were even 10 years ago.
Well, yeah, and then if they're going to lift all these regulations supposedly off the banks, and, you know, it's going to make a difference. And if interest rates are going to go higher, then the banks aren't going to be as quick to pull the trigger. And I think that one of the problems in the markets in general is banks happen to puke a lot. You know, they can't take it because, you know, they don't like that exposure, even though they don't have any, but they imagine that they do. So they force those liquidations out. But we're with our Valentine. That is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And this is the Bubba Show. Make sure you check out our highschoolinvesting.com website. And if you feel like giving us a hand, you can go to patreon.com/Bubba Trading. And make a little donation. If you do, I'll give you one free week of my advisory service for futures. It's something we like to do and something we're pretty good at. So you can check that out. And also don't forget to go to libertytalk.fm and download the Bubba Show every day so you can hear the charming voice of Miss Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubbards will be right back with more after the break. The Bubba Show. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here. The long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains and the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator, and my Valentine. All right, Angie, so talk to me about forwards. Now, I've heard a lot of horror stories about forwards. Tell me what's the deal with those?
With forwards, like forward contracts?
Yes.
Mean, or,
forwarding, like guys will sell out, and then, of course, the guy will back out later.
Oh yeah, that's always a risk. I mean, that's a risk. You know, I've had people in the past tell me that, you know, because my approach using the futures only and stuff like that. You know, there was a huge meltdown in the market structure in the '90s, the mid nineties, where
you weren't around in the mid nineties. Who are you kidding?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't in the mid nineties. I was like, didn't even know this would be part of it.
You might have still been in diapers in the '90s.
Right. And I thought, but there was a huge, and so like when I first came out to Iowa and started talking about using futures only contracts, there was a look of horror upon the faces of these people that I was talking to, because all they remember was the horror stories. And so what had happened, and at that point in time was, it was 95, 96, a couple of certain groups had went out, and with the mindset that you always have carry between the July and the December at a certain value, and blah, blah, blah. You know, we have since the dawn of time, it'll happen forever. And the market happened to rally up to 275 towards $3. So they had all of these folks locking in July contracts with the intent of delivery in December. So they were locking in July hedges. Let's say you're locking in a July 18 right now at $3. And with the intent of rolling it forward once the carry widens. So like I said, typically you see certain amounts of carry, and so you can feel comfortable. Well, they had went ahead and locked them in at $3. Well, we had a short crop that year, and then the next year I think we had a big one. Or I'm not really sure what had happened to cause it, but the market inverted significantly. So you went from, you know, July 18 it was, you know, to roll to December of 18 or whatever. At the time, it was like 96, like I said. But it ended up being like $1.20 inverse. So all of these $3 hedges, in order to roll them forward, you had to take the inversion off the market price. And so not only was the market higher at that point in time, so they locked in $3 futures and the market had went to $5, but you also were forcing these guys to take $1.20 off from this $3 hedge. And so there was a lot of anger and a lot of people backed away. There were lawsuits put in place, you know, and just very much frustration. And a lot of it was just caused by a cockiness or an assumption that people knew what the market had to do, and it didn't. And most farmers at that point weren't really used to using these HTAs. And so the tool was blamed, not necessarily the creator behind, you know, who pushed this market structure. But in any event, there is always a concern that you could have a farmer come to you and say, okay, I'm going to sell 50,000 bushel of December corn right now. And so I could say, okay, we'll book at 365 cash. I'll see you in October. and October comes and you call the grower and he, you know, doesn't return your calls, or he says, yeah, we'll have that in next week. And then next week comes and the corn doesn't show, and then the following week. And, you know, so there is always a risk anytime that you enter into a contract with a grower that they may change their mind, especially if the market rallies between then and now and they have a 365 contract and harvest comes and they can deliver 450 corn or something like that. So it's been something that I've dealt with in the past. I had a guy stiff me on a 100,000 bushel of corn one time. I've had, oh God, that was just one of many, you know. And so there's a reason that there's industry groups. You have the NGFA, it's the National Grain and Feed Association. They do arbitration. They're kind of our own little sector of law enforcement, you could say. And typically that's your first step, because outside courts may not 100% understand how grain contracts function or something like that. We've dealt with small claims court. You know, we have lawyers and things. And so part of my job is making sure that, you know, you're working with people who are good, honest people and who will follow through on the things that they say. You know, one of the nice parts about agriculture is it still is, to a certain extent, you know, a handshake type industry where people stick to their word and stuff. But in the cases that they don't, you know, you have arbitration or ways to kind of work through, you know, contract disputes and things like that. But, you know, 99% of my work is just hoping that whoever says they're going to deliver, you know, follows through on what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, no, I think the farming industry is obviously very much of a handshake business, and is as good of people as you can find as a rule. I mean, listen, you're going to find rotten apples anywhere, but I think that overall you can be pretty much assured that. But I do know, I have heard some horror stories about people who have forwarded and the price goes down, and of course they no longer want it, right? Yep. The forwards are gone. So it's an issue in this industry and in any industry, you know. At the end of it, it comes down to money, doesn't it? I mean, you know, if you feel like you're getting cheated, then you're not going to pay the money, right? And that's just the way things go. And I think, you know, when you look at this, and this is why I just think that, first of all, obviously, to me, exchange traded stuff is always the best, because the exchange guarantees the price. They guarantee the money. And, you know, as far as farmers, I think that they should just always be hedged to some extent, as long as they're hedging at either even or a profit, so that they can overcome any things that come through in the future, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, that's a conversation that we have quite often. And it's been part of the things that, you know, this past year, there's been this big push for farmers. Anyone that's been paying attention to the commodity side of things, is all of these brokers are telling people to sell the carry. We got to sell the carry, sell the carry. It was really the only point of conversation that took place at harvest time, because it was the only highlight that you had at harvest time. Prices were depressed. Farmers were depressed. You know, you had all of these things going on, and so you had all of this conversation about capturing carry and stuff like that. And a lot of farmers would look at you blank-eyed when you'd say something like that, because they don't 100% understand what that means. And the reality is unless you're hedged, you can't capture the carry. You know what I mean? Like, you can trade spreads if you want to as a farmer, but you have to lift out of each leg eventually, and it kind of offsets any of the gains that you would have. Whereas if you have a short position in place via a hedge, you roll that forward. You know, you buy the DEES board and you sell the July when the position works in your favor type deal. And I talk and spend a lot of my time trying to educate farmers, you know, like I said, on how to trade like an elevator. And my number one job as an elevator is every bushel of ownership that I have. So every bushel that I'm long, every cash bushel I physically own or own on the farm, the bins or whatever, has to be shorted on the board, you know. And so as a farmer, if he's going to produce, you know, 100,000 bushel, in theory, he should have 100,000 bushel hedged upon, you know, the end of the production season. Now, I say in theory because sometimes farmers are unable to do that, but that's how you use options, whether you own puts or something else. You know, there's a way that a farmer can maintain a 100% or close to 100% hedged position. And so that's where a lot of these folks are running into hiccups or problems perhaps with maintaining significant margin or return on investment on their side of things, is because they aren't trading, you know, and we've talked about it before, they aren't necessarily trading like a business or using the tools available to them. They're just kind of hoping that the market continues to work in their favor. And I always say that, you know, hope's not a marketing strategy. And so that's where you try to teach and reinforce and do all the things that you need to do to get them to be ahead of the game.
Now, when you say you hedge everything you own, okay, you don't hedge mm-hmm. the commitments to you though, do you?
No, and if I own it, so if a farmer says to me right now, I'm going to deliver you 50,000 bushel of July or December 18 corn, I hedge that. But I don't hedge on the come. Like, I don't, there'll be a lot of times where people will say they'll hedge, like during harvest time, if you anticipate another 50,000 bushel of production, there's a lot of farm elevator folk that'll go out and hedge that.
Right.
I don't. I never bet on the come. But anything that I expect, you know, if I own it, if I told the farmer that I will pay him, you know, 396 futures or whatever, I have and he agrees that he's going to deliver 20,000 bushel at 396, and I have a short position on the board at 396.
But do you ever get concerned that they don't deliver and you get stuck if the market breaks to the upside?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's, like I said, that's why, you know, you want to have a signed contract, a signed copy of the contract. I need to have notes on the conversation. I need to have everything that I can, all of my T's crossed and my I's dotted. And then if they were to not deliver, then we have to go through the arbitration system that I talked about,
right,
to either get delivery or get our money back. You know, because if they say they're going to deliver 396 and the board rallies to 496,
yep,
we get a buck difference. It's their responsibility if they want to lift out of that contract, if they can't or whatever, it's their responsibility to communicate with me their lack of intent to deliver. And then we have to work it out, whether they pay us that dollar difference in market or we decide, you know, if there's carry in the market and they decide they want to roll it forward to the next year, which is always a bit dangerous because most of the time you're just kicking the can down the road and probably going to face the same problem a year later. But, you know, there's tons of reasons why it's concerning, but again, you just hope that the people that you're doing business with will follow through.
You hope that they're honorable and that you have to be like W.C. Fields, trust everybody, but cut the cards.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, I get it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I'll get some.
Hold on. We got to take a break. I know you're pumped up and ready to go. This is Angie Setzer, my Valentine for today, the goddess of grains and also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. And this is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day, including The Sporting Edge on the weekends and also our new Crypto Investor X program on the weekends with Matt Demeter. The Bubba Show, top of boards. We'll be right back after the break with more from Angie. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself right here on Valentine's Day, spending it with us. What a pleasure. Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, also the vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, my dear, I want to talk about the dollar. Okay. I know everybody always wants to talk about the dollar this, the dollar that, blah, blah, blah. First of all, I don't think the dollar plays as much in the grain markets as it used to, because I think everybody's kind of priced in. The dollar's going to be a lot higher anyways, which is why grains themselves and none of the commodities really moved up when the dollar was making 5-year lows. I believe that everybody knows that the dollar is a BS thing now and that it's just a total manipulation play. So they don't pay attention to it as much anymore. Am I right or wrong in your opinion?
I think you're 100% right. It's kind of funny that you say that, because I had this conversation last night with a group of growers in Minnesota. You know, where a year ago at this time, everyone was talking about how the high dollar was going to paralyze our ability to export and yada, yada, yada. And the reality is right now we're making or made lows, significant lows on the index, and our export expectations are actually lower than a year ago. Not saying that lasts forever. I think corn exports could meet a year ago eventually, but that's neither here nor there. You know, the reality is supply availability and things of that nature will trump where currency is trading. Maybe if all things are considered equal, currency may have a big role. It does in my day-to-day life with the Ontario-Michigan trade. I mean, that's a big thing that I see, you know, what the loonies doing versus the dollar can have a big impact on our overall basis and cash market structure that we have in Michigan, because a lot of grain can move across the bridge into Michigan, or vice versa, if the currency conversion is accurate. But yeah, I think when it comes down to it, I think this idea of the dollar having this significant role in our day-to-day pricing structure is kind of a bit of a fallacy. Maybe it worked in 10, 15 years ago when we were the number one producer of grains and oil seeds in the world, but now there's some competition and year-round competition and availability of supplies, quality, and price trump, what your currency is doing, I think, over anything else.
Well, I also believe that my personal opinion is that the dollar is not important because everybody knows it's manipulated. And the real key is that they're trying to keep the dollar low to keep interest rates low. That's an artificial way to suppress interest rates, because if you look at the global economy, which is what we talk about in grains, the other people that are borrowing money from the United States, because the dollar is so cheap, it doesn't feel like our rates are really going up yet. So if the dollar rises, then all of a sudden the rates really take off, and that's what everybody's so concerned about, which is why the equities have so much trouble here. And that's my opinion, is what's going to fail, which is why I think that the farmers and the pricing of all this stuff are smarter than everybody else, because they kind of realize that. And so they don't get so excited when the dollar gets pushed down, because they know it's only a matter of time before it takes off to the upside anyways. So I think that's kind of a worldwide deal. But so we've got, oil is getting hammered, right? And, we really haven't seen what you would expect from some of these commodities based on the lower dollar. So, the answer is what? I mean, I think oil, basically, I think oil is going significantly lower. I don't know. Do you guys hedge any oil? Do you do anything with oil for any of your people?
Yeah, well, not necessarily for my farmers, but we have, we've traded, and I've learned, and I have taken some lump. We traded heating oil for a while to try to hedge our diesel costs. And that worked great the first time, not so great the second or third time. And so we kind of abandoned that philosophy for a minute, but we've done it. I mean, we lock in natural gas for, we'll watch the energies, natural gas for harvest time. If the value gets cheap enough and we think it works for us, whether it's cash or futures, we'll do that. But, we do pay attention to it. It did used to have a significant role in corn. For a while there, crude and corn were tied very, very closely together because of ethanol. Now ethanol is almost maturing and developing a different market structure, so it's not necessarily as tightly to crude as what it was. And that was another conversation that I had with that group last night, is, you talk about geopolitical tensions and turmoil and things like that. And like I said, crude and corn used to be tied very closely together, and crude used to be tied very closely to what was going on in the Middle East. So Middle Eastern conflicts played such a huge role in our day-to-day market structure, and now it's almost as though we don't even pay attention anymore. And so yeah, it's really interesting to pay attention to watch the energies and listen to what folks are thinking about that side. And in my opinion, I only watch it out of the peripheral. Simply because of its former importance, I guess you could say. But yeah, I agree with you in the sense that we're continuing to maximize production. I am amazed and have been amazed and continue to be amazed that we traded back up above 60. We're domestically we're producing the heck out of the stuff. So to see the price rally the function of supply and demand would indicate that we should be a bit cheaper than where we are. But I guess demand trumps the increase in supply here for a while, and we saw prices move higher. But I don't know if that needs to continue, really.
No, I think that's the OPEC manipulation. We're net exporters of oil. We're going to have another bill coming today. There's nothing to, again, that's more of the markets, playing games versus actual reality. Yeah. I mean, listen, I think oil someday will be back at under $20 someday. I mean, it won't be soon, but again, I'm a straight seller of oil anyways. I just wondered, how you guys look at things like that, because it's just another product. That's how the airlines learned how to finally stay in business instead of going bankrupt every 5 years. They figured out if we hedge our costs and we know what it is, it makes a difference, right? Because those guys use a lot of fuel on the farms, don't they?
Yeah. And they do. They will hedge their fuel costs. A lot of times they may do it straight cash. So maybe they don't use the futures. they just pay attention to what's going on out there, and they allow their fuel guy to do the hedging for them. So a lot of the farmers out there actually buy their fuel from their co-op that they sell their grain to. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting world in which we live. You know, most of the co-ops out here in Iowa own gas stations, and you know, our co-op that my husband works for is who's responsible for filling our propane. You know, so it's interesting to kind of see that relationship. And so, yeah, they'll hedge their fuel costs, but the farmers will, you know, work maybe directly with the co-op on hedging theirs, but they'll do it in a cash sense, to where they'll lock in their natural gas or their propane or whatever it may be for harvest that year. And maybe they lock in diesel for the full year if the price is low enough or something like that. But it'll be a cash trade that they put in place, as opposed to maybe a hedge. And then the co-op itself will do the hedging on that.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, look, you know, it's all the bottom line is it comes down to dollars and cents. That's what you mm-hmm. do. You try to make sense with dollars, right? I mean, that's what you're trying. That what you're trying to do is, well, you're trying to, you're running your business, which is helping everybody else run their business. Would that not be a correct statement?
Yeah. No, it is. It's exactly right. Yeah. And so there's a lot of times where farmers will ask me, well, how do you get paid on this? You know, with a skeptical eye, and it's like, well, you know, I charge a small fee to put the hedge on, and then if I'm doing my job right, I can make a couple more cents when I trade the basis, you know, because I go to the end user, and I have, instead of selling 10, 50,000 bushel increments, I have 500,000 at a time, and so they know that their needs are covered, and so sometimes that gets you a couple more cents in basis or something like that that you can capture. But yeah, that's, I mean, I work with, tens of millions of dollars, and hope like heck we pull down a small percentage of margin on it.
Now. Well, that's right. It's a margin business, and of course you got to do everything right, because you know you're going to make an error, not an error, but you're going to have a problem as everybody else. I mean, one of the things we always account for, right, is variable change. You never know. Yeah. There's no guarantees. Okay, so we know we may have to make an adjustment. So we always have to account for that in our margin. And listen, you work hard to make your money, and you're entitled to make it. And that's what I get for Valentine's, a hardworking Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, and also the vice president of grains at Sisson's Auditor. As always, thanks so much, my dear. I appreciate having you on today.
Thanks for having me, and have a happy Valentine's Day.
I will, because I got to have you on the show. And that's our friend Angie Setzer from the Vice President of Grains at Citizens Auditor. And this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz. And make sure you check out highschoolinvesting.com. Help a brother out on Valentine's Day. Let's make a little donation, and I'll give you a free week of my advisory service. And that will do it for today. This is The Bubba Show, and I am Todd Bubba Horwitz. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time in the same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Have a great day. Happy Valentine's Day, and here's a big kiss for all of you. Yeah, take care, everybody. Have a great day. The Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.